Sorry about the delay. Okay, my name is Kenneth Gears. I work for NCIS, and I've got a nice job in Estonia. So I've been there since the since 2007, a couple of months after the infamous cyber attacks. So in May this year, we held a cyber defense exercise. It particularly wanted to look at some cyber terrorist scenario, and particularly with critical information infrastructure, some SCADA elements. We're in Northern Europe. We're pretty far north. I'll show you in a second. But we, in cooperation with the Swedish National Defense College and an organization that's sort of the Swedish equivalent of DARPA, we put together an effort that took about, you know, for some people maybe up to a year of work. But here's Sweden and Estonia. There's Germany down there, Mother Russia to the right, and Santa Claus just above us, kind of give you some perspective. Estonia is about on southern Alaska latitude in the Baltic Sea there in the middle. Here's a picture of Estonia in the snow, and we had lots of snow last year, as much as about 100 years. So just two slides on the 2007 cyber attacks. So if you're not familiar with them, there was a Russian or a Soviet war memorial that they moved outside of the center of town, and it upset the local Russians and Russia as a country, who view the World War II as, you know, in greater terms than just Soviet or Stalinist legacy. They see it as real national achievement. So they were very upset about it, and there was a corresponding cyber attack, which wasn't the biggest or the most sophisticated cyber attack in history. However, Estonia sort of occupies a special place, I think, in the history of cyberspace and cyber attacks, just because it was one of those events when a major international crisis or mid-level international crisis kind of spilled over into a cyber attack that was intended to hurt a country. So anyway, it's a good case study, for a bunch of reasons. We could talk about it later if you like, but Estonia is small, homogeneous, very wired. They made the jump from sort of archaic Soviet technology to an e-Estonia. That's their goal. So a couple of their achievements: the highest per capita online elections, you can pay taxes and et cetera with your phone and your PIN calculator, 98% of banking is done online, and Skype is Estonian originally, for instance. Here is the Cyber Center of Excellence. If we've had some seminars, some training, we have a botnet mitigation course right now, and a couple of conferences on cyber conflict. So one of the questions about cyber attacks is whether or not they're a threat to national security. And really, it's a fascinating and worthwhile discussion stream to follow, because you have people who say it's the end of the world, and others really who think it's complete hype. And of course, it's somewhere in the middle, one of the things about the cyber defense exercise is we wanted to, you know, make some progress on clarifying that situation. What we do know, though, is that, you know, the web, I don't want to dwell on this, but is growing every day. And when you have electricity to elections sort of also riding on cyber now, you do have something at stake to protect. So, national security thinking is still to be determined, but if you saw a really great keynote at Black Hat the other day by General Hayden, I think they're going to put it online by today. I encourage you to watch it, because the former CIA and NSA director is actually was quite insightful on this very topic. Let's see. CDXs are difficult to stage. There's no doubt about it. And I think each one of them is unique. You really have to simulate everything. And the problem with IT is it changes every day, of course, and so will your CDX. The military, of course, is the original founder of the internet, and they use computers for everything now to stage complex geopolitical and military scenarios. But the question is, of course, how well you can model the real world, and more on that later. So some of the structure of the cyber defense exercise, which you may or not be familiar with, you have friendly forces, hostile forces. You have to have sort of a team dedicated to the infrastructure, and at least a management team that, that sort of oversees everything and tries to determine its significance. The blue teams, these are the primary targets for training, and usually they are, you know, they're people like yourselves that do system administration and computer security for a living, and their goal is to defend the CIA of the networks. The red team, its goal is to undermine that CIA. And within the virtual environment, the cool thing is not only is malicious code authorized, but it's highly encouraged. There's so many things to talk about. I mean, one of the basic things is whether or not it's a white box or a black box test, and that goes to really whether the red team has prior knowledge of the networks or not. In our case, we wanted to simulate some prior reconnaissance, so we gave them 3 weeks to look at the network topology. The white team is, I was on the white team, I'm an analyst really, and so, but I've been doing cyber analysis for a long time. So we're supposed to kind of make everything run on time, but also give it some punch, and of course in the end it's the white team that's going to talk to the policymakers and those funding the exercise. And try to explain why it was important and worthwhile. The green team, though, makes everything happen, really. I mean, you can't stage a CDX with analysts, right? Otherwise, you wind up with only hype. So it's the green team that actually connects all the wires together. And these guys were at the Swedish equivalent of DARPA in the middle of Sweden in a place called Linköping. The scenario is important because, you know, What do you want to say? What is your goal? And then how are you going to write the story afterwards? It's key because, you know, it goes to resources and cost and whether or not sort of the threat is sort of appropriate to the fear and the investments toward mitigating that threat. Because, you know, really one lone hacker is probably not going to sort of allocate any congressional money, that threat. But when you look at a foreign military or intelligence service, it's quite different. And if your scenario decides one way or another on this question, really, then everything changes. So a little bit about cyber war, and these are my own thoughts, but you know, I think, you know, cyber attack by itself is really not very much, but it's, you know, the real world effects, and those can be as broad and as deep as the imagination of the attacker. So cyber espionage governments are at it across the world because why? It's there's a really high return on investment in cyber espionage. I also think propaganda is really key to look at from the standpoint of, you know, everyone's at the Pentagon anyway is talking about narrative today. It's not whether you can go beat up your enemy on the field of battle only, it's whether or not you can, you know, win the hearts and minds both of your own population and the population on the other side as well. So, you know, this was known for a long time. This is not new information. But if you go to the Art of War, he says, look, so you have fire and you're going to use fire to attack. Well, there's all kinds of things you can do with fire. Let me just give you some examples. So you can hit soldiers, their stores, baggage trains, etc. And finally, of course, you can just drop, hurl dropping fire amongst the enemy. And of course, all of these, you could think of a direct or indirect analogy in cyberspace. So just a couple of screenshots to prove to you that cyber conflict is alive and well around the world. This is in 2000. There was three Israeli soldiers that were kidnapped in Lebanon, and Israeli hackers, you know, this really kicked off, I think, sort of a new period to a certain degree. They took out their frustration a little bit in cyberspace, and this is the Hezbollah, so the organization which would have kidnapped the soldiers in Lebanon, their website, and it was an attack against it. And well, you know, you always throw around the word sophisticated, but this one really was to a certain degree because the site administrators really had a tough time undoing it. And when they wanted to move their site to another place on the internet, they discovered that somebody had already bought up various spellings and misspellings of Hezbollah before the attack. So even within NATO, and the Cyber Center of Excellence basically supports NATO, so roughly 30 countries, Europe and North America, you know, you have conflict between Turkey and Greece. You have cyber conflict on behalf of ideas. In 2008, when Lithuania outlawed Soviet symbols in the country, the first thing that hundreds and hundreds of sites throughout the country, including in the government, were defaced with Soviet propaganda. Within countries, you have, you know, calls for freedom or anti-government appeals. You have a guy here, Gary McKinnon, in the UK, who literally is hacking on behalf of all of us, sort of the people of the world. He was convinced that the Pentagon knows about UFOs, and he was getting into the network to find proof of it. Here's a South American hacker group that is literally hacking on behalf of God. They have thousands of defacements around the world, and they always leave a religious message. So, 2007, you had the Estonia case that was really the business case model of a cyber attack. In 2008, a year later, you have the military case model. And so, really, it was important, and it's not like the Pentagon didn't know about this prior. However, Georgia has this place in cyber history as well as clearly showing that any military conflict or operation in the future is going to have a cyber dimension. There's no two ways about it today. So this question of an electronic or digital Pearl Harbor is also kind of funny, because we're also been debating that, just like the hype question, for a long time. And while if you missed this one in 2007 in October, the Israeli Air Force destroyed the Syrian alleged nuclear reactor. And it's widely alleged in the open press that a cyber attack played a critical role in taking down the Syrian air defense before the planes crossed the border. So this was just last week on Wired magazine, which is in general sort of a skeptic on the whole cyber war thing, but just some information on how how widespread the vulnerabilities of SCADA systems are. And I threw that in here because our CDX looks at that issue. So just some high-level thinking about cyber warfare. You know, I think the internet is vulnerable. Cyber defenses are relatively weak. I think that's one of the issues with cyber wars. It really kind of turns on its head the historical notion of defense has all the home field advantage, essentially, like in sports. It's opposite in cyberspace because of the anonymity issue, etc. So non-state actors, you can't forget about them. But really, cyber attack, again, it's sort of in the it could be different every time, essentially, and so the question mark is key. So now to the CDX, and what is the CDX all about? I think what you really want to do, especially on the infrastructure side and on the white team side, before you sort of lift the gates and let the horses run, is you want to develop something that's credible. Something that, you know, because these cost a lot of money and time, and so you want those who invested money in it and those who read the after-action report to feel like it was worthwhile. So in particular, that's going to be real-world impact, I think. And then I think a cyber attack truly can range from a minor annoyance to probably a national security crisis. I mean, if you think about, for instance, the photos of the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. I mean, those did more damage to the political interests of the United States than all hacks combined, maybe, in history. And that was not a hack, even. It was, but what it did was show the power of the web to take a picture or a well-written story, and it can be in everyone's living room today. And that's probably the most powerful cyber attack that exists today. So one of the things about the nation-state simulation is that military and government agencies, they're much, much more powerful than an individual and organization. And they're not only are they going to have all their bases covered on IT, but then they're going to be supported by experts in other disciplines. And this goes to the heart, for instance, of SCADA as well. I mean, you really would have to know something that is really pretty esoteric, insider type information if you're going to go after a factory. I mean, you can't expect to manipulate sort of SCADA controls without some knowledge of, you know, that is not widespread. Here's just an example, but at Sandia National Laboratory, they have a very famous red team that has lots of successful compromises, and I thought it worthwhile to put the quote from a former chief there. You know, our general Methodist asks system owners, what's your worst nightmare? And then our goal is to make that happen. And of course, at Sandia Labs, of course, they would have the engineers and the wherewithal to pull together this nation-state style full-scope attack that you just normally would not see on the internet. And this is a kind of thing that is a whole other level that is likely in these ongoing negotiations between U.S. and Russia in particular today. You know, how do you manage these kind of things? So let's look a little bit at CDX history and how we got to today. You know, cyber defenders, they may or not be warned when these things come their way. A good case in point was Eligible Receiver in 1997, in which case the NSA played the role of North Korean hackers, and an article about the event in Foreign Affairs was pretty good. You know, but the thing is if you have a number of guys working on this and they've got a smart plan and they attack at various levels, you can imagine how much confusion they could create, especially if they owned all the email servers in question. Because it goes to the question of prior reconnaissance, and you know that, you know, the general talks to the colonel talks to the captain, talks to the private, etc., on down. And if you can insert yourself in there, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you could have these guys telling each other to go, everybody go play golf, take the day off that day. So here's another example just about how different these kinds of things are, but the EPA in 2006 was curious if the water supply could be poisoned, and so Sandia looked at that, and one of the first things they found was that there were just way too many facilities to look at, and so you had to come up with kind of a programmatic angle to take to pass out the information to all relevant parties. A current trend is international CDXs. This is on the rise quickly, and this is one of the specific things we really wanted to do in Estonia. Not surprisingly, at the Cooperative Cyber Defense Center of Excellence, the whole point is to get international institutions on the same page. And I was real lucky to be the first one assigned from internationally to the Cyber Center of Excellence in 2007, and now we're at 9 countries. I just read in the news last week we got Hungary on board, so that's 9 countries, including the Italy, Spain, Germany, and a bunch of other countries as well. So I think within 10 years, from the NATO angle, all 30 or so, I think there's 28 now, countries will be part of the center. And so it could be quite a hub for, I think, cyber defense in the future. However, so you can see them growing in sophistication. In 2006, we looked at hacktivists. In 2008, it was about a nation-state actor. And then already in 2009, you see CDX's stage in places like Tajikistan, which I'm sure was new for them. So Baltic Cyber Shield, that's the name of our exercise. We had 7 countries, 6 national blue teams, and we had a 20-person international red team. And for what it's worth, the red team was, we had to buy them, you know, some hotel rooms and I think beer and cake and stuff, but we had one proposal that came from a large contractor to supply the red team, just to give some perspective, and the price was $500,000 to provide a red team. We got by on far, far less than that, and they were quite good, actually. And it goes to, I think, another area, and I think DEFCON is the perfect place to talk about this, but, you know, it's an area in which you need passion. You need passion more than you need money, really. And DEFCON really is all about that, because you can see people come here because they want to be here. So the Baltic Cyber Shield is a live fire CDX. It's really cool because I've been to some in the past, some DOD things, frankly, that were all, you know, guys sitting around a table and somebody passes you a note. And that note says, you are under massive cyber attack. What do you do? You know, and of course, it's a Navy SEAL or something. He says, okay, well, you know, who do I kill? And the neat thing about Baltic Cyber Shield is that it was none of that, really. It was just all, let's build the infrastructure and let's let the red team attack the blue teams and see what the blue teams do. And so that's really cool. So here are some of the inspirations for it. And there was a small event in 2008 in which, but it was much, much smaller. It was really some students from Sweden, some students from Estonia got together over a weekend, and sauna and beer. Sauna is a big deal in Estonia. If you're not familiar with the Finland and Estonian culture, and so a lot of our meetings, they go into the evening, and we have dinner, and then literally everybody is naked, and it's one of the things about it is we call it Meeting Room 3, but it is a place where, you know, you don't bring any hardware or software or clothing, and so it's, I guess, in the end it facilitates a conversation, especially after all the vodka that's provided. So the scenario, so I'm on the white team, so scenario is important to me, but we wanted to explore the question of cyber terrorism. In particular, we want to look at this SCADA issue. So the blue teams were going to be kind of a hired gun rapid reaction team that shows up when there was a computer security audit and failure at a company. There was volatile geopolitical tensions. There was a threat against these companies that had dirty energy. And there was even a fear that there were some insiders on the network. So the company had decided to wholesale get rid of their staff and bring in this team. The blue team is definitely, we decided, is the goal for this year, you know, to teach and to train. But two other goals as well. One, we really wanted as much international participation as possible, which if you're interested in next year's event, you can get in touch with me. It's fairly easy through ccdcoe.org or the Cyber Defense Center of Excellence website. But we'll start that almost immediately for next year. And Estonia is a lovely place to visit in June. And then finally, we wanted to say how many things that could we come up with for future CDXs, not only for our center, but for the world, really, in terms of lessons learned and how to do it better in the future. So on the white team, we had to come up with scoring criteria. And so this is always a lot of interest because, as you'll see in the captured flag room here, you know, the scoring board is what everybody's really interested in, who's winning and who's losing. So the positive points for blue team, these are thwarted attacks and innovative strategy and tactics. But a crucial element, if you're not familiar with it, are these business requests. So not only are you under massive cyber attack, but somebody hands you a note which says you need to, you know, the CEO of your company is in another country and he needs immediately, or she needs immediate access to a sort of internal, you know, file server because they need to give a presentation, right? So these are business requests that not only do you have to fend off the attacks, but you have to sort of keep your company running at the same time. And so the negative points, that's pretty clear. We'll talk about how to lose points. Here's the green team, they're based in Sweden. So one of the key things is these miniature factories. So we had this steel table, and I'll show you a picture of it. We had these small factories on the table that represented sort of the grand prizes in Baltic Cyber Shield 2010. And we actually put this butane flame on the back that if the hackers could figure out, they could blow up the factory. The blue teams, they all had identical infrastructure. They weren't allowed to log in to their network until the day of, and that simulated the rapid reaction team style approach that we had. The network was fairly insecure, and as you can see, there are four VLAN segments. I'll show you those. Here's some of the specs on the game environment. So you can see that, but if you're interested, you can check that out later or ask me about it. Here's the network. So there was internal DMZ, HMI, and PLC, which connect the program logic controller that was connected to the remote factory. Our SCADA, here's some of the specs on that. There's a human-machine interface, which was Simplicity software. GE PLCs. Here are the factories. So there were two each per blue team. And when I visited Sweden before the exercise, this is such a big event, so I'll just tell you, you know, the bits and pieces that I was able to learn, but, you know, there was a group of us there, you know, trying to query the green team on everything they did, and somebody kind of mentioned, well, these are toys or these are models or something, and he said, these are absolutely not. He said, from our perspective, we tried to design this scenario as accurately as possible, and this hardware and software is in use today for SCADA systems. So here's a model steam engine that was also there. I understand that they had a little solar plant. I wasn't able to see that. That was also connected to the system. Here's the GE PLC. The blue teams, when they logged onto the network, they were certainly allowed to harden the network. They had a minimum number of applications and services, of course, that they had to provide on the network. And just FYI, this is really difficult, and I'll get to this shortly, but the white team really needs to have enough people so that they can see and understand everything that's going on in the CDX, because it's not easy. Really, all the things that the red team is doing, all the things that the blue team is doing, the white team, which tends to be comprised of people like me or analysts or, you know, kind of government people, they're just not tech enough to understand everything that's happening. And so I'll talk about that in a second. But they're definitely allowed to install and modify existing software once they log in. So the red team, we had 20 people on the team, and they're angry environmentalists, and they're going to try to shut down these power companies and force them into greener energy. So internally, there were four sub-teams. You can see those. We allowed them 3 weeks for prior reconnaissance and a place and to do some hacking and leave a couple of back doors to simulate some insider activity beforehand. There was good visualization for the white team in this exercise. So you could see the topography, you could see the chat channels, and a cool terrestrial map of the world. There was a lot of work that went into this effort. And so while we were all in Northern Europe, we actually used the Southern Hemisphere for the game. And we had, you know, two of the blue teams were in South America, two in Africa, and two in Southeast Asia. And then the red team was in Iceland. Here's part of the visualization that we had. Here's a closer look, so you can see the connectivity that exists between the attackers and the defenders, and also the endpoints, the factories. Here's the Cyber Center of Excellence. If you come for a visit, you're all invited and welcome. We have a number of big events a year now. We just had a conference a couple weeks ago, and we had Bruce Schneier and Melissa Hathaway and a bunch of others who were, if Charlie Miller is here. He gave the talk of the conference, which was Kim Jong-il and me. So I highly encourage you to see that here. It's Charlie Miller's advice to North Korea on how to build a cyber attack army to take down the U.S. But we have a great infrastructure in Estonia to work with. The Red Team campaign was divided into these four phases, and I'll go through those individually. Initially, there was a declaration of war. So the first goal was to deface the public website of the Blue Teams and to threaten them with action if they didn't take some greener strategies toward energy provision. So in phase one, the white team was allowed to compromise. They had some limits the white team placed, and still things moved so quickly that the white team has trouble staying on top of everything. But the red team largely accomplished these goals, which was in the first. So there was 2 days, essentially morning, afternoon. First morning was compromise one server in the DMZ and one in the internal, and it was still quite a hectic morning because the blue teams came in to a fairly insecure network and are scrambling to understand the network and to find backdoors and to prevent attacks. Phase two, the first afternoon, so the red team was able to get over 40 compromises. One MySQL SCADA report server. One of the things we wondered was would we make it too easy for the red team? But it's really hard to know, and all of this we're still discussing with the teams involved. I mean, it's like any class you go to. You know, if you go to a hacking class, there'll be, you know, a couple of people who they've already finished the exercise before it's even begun, a couple of people who can't even turn on their computer, and then a wide range in the middle. And so it's hard to know exactly where to teach. But we clearly also had that as well. There was one team, one blue team, that by far was the winner, and I'll show you what they did in a second. But some that had just about 0 points. And I went to this at Black Hat the other day. They had this National Collegiate Cyber Defense Competition panel. And I was talking to the red team guys afterwards, and I said, what really annoys you about, what some of the blue team guys, what they do? And he said, the worst thing by far is that they just adopt unrealistic strategies and tactics. And they just tend to unplug everything from the network, at the start of the exercise. And then they start slowly rebuilding. We also had one of those in ours, essentially they did exactly that. So phase three, the third morning, or the second day in the morning, essentially the goal was to find these HMI terminals and see if the red team could get a hold of the SCADA infrastructure. In the end, only one of the 12 model factories was set on fire. And it was went off at the 1300 Zulu on the second day, and you can see how it was set. And you can imagine if all 12 of those had been going off at once, I'm not sure that the fire alarm system would have held. One of the differences, though, between just bringing in a red team and what a military or an intelligence agency might do to you is the fact that our red team just really didn't understand how the factory processes worked. Our Sandia red team, if their goal were to take on your company, they would have the necessary support personnel to probably figure out how to do you in and blow up your factory, theoretically, that our red team just didn't seem to have. And so it was an issue that maybe more red team, green team communications or training could have helped, but it's always hard with these CDXs because all these people you're bringing in for the two-day exercise, they're really busy people otherwise. So the phase four, this turned out to be not such a great idea, but we allowed the red team essentially to start destroying everything. And what they did was sort of destroy their own ability to win the game, essentially, because the white team had no idea what was going on. And this was really demoralizing for the blue team, for instance, as well, because there was so much chaos and destruction. And so one of the recommendations, well, I'll show you in a second, is do not have this kind of phase. You really need, throughout the CDX to have, this could be on, day five when it's over, perhaps. But, everything you do, there's so much time and money and effort that goes into it, really needs to have a clear point and a goal. So here are some of the vulnerabilities that were exploited by the red team. In the end, they had 80 computers. Here's some more stuff that they did. One of the significant things is that they had a zero day that was really good for just about any browser in existence today. The problem was that you really need, for a cyber defense exercise, dumb users. And this is another category of people that we thought that the white team could just fill in essentially quickly. And it was absolutely not possible because, one, they weren't tech enough, and two, they're too busy doing other things. And so one of the recommendations, which you'll see, is to have a much more robust white team and some technical people there, but also, unfortunately, you need to allocate some people who are really just dumb users because otherwise you don't have any really client-side exploits, right, and client-side attacks. That the red team was kind of stuck, hacking itself without relying on any of the dumb users internally to help them achieve their goals. So Blue Team 5 was an easy winner in the game. They were able to take all their essential services and move them to a higher security virtual machine. They used out-of-band communications from the beginning, IPsec filtering, and after the first part of the game, I think the word was that the red team, apart from some denial of service activity, was able to gain really no points against them. And I talked to the guy the other day on the phone. He said that they felt like they were able to find the malware very quickly in the back doors and shut them off. Here are some of the things that the blue teams did successfully, within Linux and Windows and just on the network. But AppArmor, I understand, was really helpful. The SE-46 computer integrity system. They also spent the winning team employed that. So were the goals met for the exercise? We hope so, but I think to a certain degree, one of the things we wanted to do was just have the exercise work so that everybody felt that they were gainfully employed, and it appeared that happened. There was very little downtime reported. We were able to at least look at the cyber terrorist SCADA scenario. We had a lot of people. It was over 100 people from 7 countries. So some of the lessons, more white team manpower. And you have to have at least one white team member per blue team and 2 for the red team. There's a lot of mistrust there, frankly. What the red team says, we've done X, that you'll get the blue team saying they absolutely did not do that, and vice versa. And, you know, part of the thing about cyber attack and cyber defense is that there is a lot of uncertainty, frankly. Am I under attack or am I not? Enough said on that. It's very important to have one full day, we think, after this exercise that's only on mechanics, that is on connectivity, bandwidth, rules, scoring. You cannot have any questions once the bell sounds and the game starts about scoring rules I can't log in, my passwords don't work, or you know, I'm trying to do X, Y, but the bandwidth is not there. All of that, you need to spend a full day those efforts. You need dumb users, and so don't forget that these are like your interns or something to bring them in. And we truly had wasted O day from the standpoint of the red team. That was going to be their way to get into the network on the HMI side. VMware server console was a failure. Really, it was too big and slow, and it didn't work with certain types of software. And so that we need to come up with another solution. They're already working on that for next year, and you might be interested in that. For instance, you can contact us. The blue teams, they really need some administrative rights. They can't always ask the change control board or, you know, the white team or the green team, can we do X, Y, or Z? There's just no time for it. So to a certain extent, you really need to give your blue teams the ability to download and install software, and perhaps think about that prior and have a better server than we did with patches and software on it that they may need. In any project this big, you can imagine there were 7 different clashing agendas, and so that's really critical to have a large white team with really sort of maybe even military-style authoritative, you got to do this and you have to do it by Monday sort of thing, because everybody's so busy. You can imagine up to a CDX, and once it starts, a lot of people really haven't had time to think about it. Final thought for me is some of the challenges inherent in a CDX are the same challenges that you're going to have in the real world. I mean, you're not going to have any 2 CDXs that are the same, and that's probably a good thing, because there might not be 2 cyber attacks that are ever quite the same. We don't know what's going to happen 2 weeks from now or 2 years from now. We have no idea. The intangible nature of cyberspace, you know, very subjective. And we had one at our conference recently, this Martin Lubicki of the RAND Corporation. He spoke about this idea he's working with, Sub Rosa Cyber War, which I thought was quite interesting, in how you can imagine a fairly healthy cyber war take place between two nation states, and nobody knows about it. Why does nobody know about it? Because there is no incentive for either side to discuss it, right? The legal issues, the political issues, you might want to hack back, you don't know quite what they've got, you don't want to let them know, you want to try and do what they did to you, etc. There's just too many unknowns in cyberspace, too many intangibles, such that you could imagine even a fairly healthy cyber war going entirely unreported. Now, I know there's a new thing in Estonia. There's a lot, like, for instance, I mentioned this online elections, online taxes, Skype. There's a number of the Estonia cyber war of 2007, and so there's a number of firsts, and there's a new first in Estonia. There's something called the Estonian Cyber Defense League now, which they're only just unveiling. And I think it stems from 2007, but it's also something that you might want to look out for, and they were discussing it. There was a general over at the Black Hat this week discussing the same thing about you know, he works at the Office of Secretary of Defense, and how can he get into the society in America and figure out, you know, who's under attack? And there's so much intellectual property, for instance, his university work and all of this stuff. From a certain standpoint, these are all non-military targets, right? You're talking about the University of X, University of Y, or this company that are probably the primary targets, perhaps, for cyber defense and cyber attack. And, you know, the stock exchange, for instance, is not a military target. It's not even a valid, perhaps, you know, military target during wartime. However, you can imagine that these are healthy targets. Anyway, enough on that. So I asked him for all this documentation. I said, can you tell me some more about the Cyber Defense League? And he sent me a bunch of documentation. But they're just unveiling it now, and it's kind of a national guard for cybersecurity in Estonia. And so this is going to be interesting to watch. One of the reasons that people like Estonia on this cyber issue is that it's a great sort of incubator or test bed for all these things. And again, I think this is a new first for Estonia, maybe. And I heard from somebody, I have no idea if this is accurate, but they might be looking to expand this to about 10,000 people, which is a lot, especially in a country as small as Estonia. That would be like 1 million people in our country or something. But anyway, so these are the two pictures that he sent me of personnel in the Cyber Defense League. He actually sent me these yesterday, and I don't know if this is intended to be kind of a joke or not, but he's probably saying these are some of the people that are his targets for to be personnel in the Cyber Defense League, which they don't look like cyber defenders, look like dancers. So references, I'm going to be on the panel here next, so unfortunately I don't have Q&A across the way, but I'll be around and for the next couple of days, and I'm willing, I think we have a few more minutes left, you can ask me questions now if you like. Thanks.